And while driving in the car, I was thinking, what is bhakti? What do we know about bhakti? How do we describe it? Is it love? Is it synonymous with love, or is it something else? You know, a lot of times you're talking on the telephone, doing something, somebody, our wife calls, spouse calls, child calls, so yeah, get done, okay, honey, I love you, okay, bye. You know, saying goodbye, I love you. Okay. So is that what it is? How do we describe love? Is there a description to love? Is there a word meaning to love? If we open our dictionary, the Merriam-Webster, we'll probably have a lot of meanings of the word love. And if we open the Sanskrit dictionary also, probably they will do the same thing for bhakti also. But how do we explain bhakti or love, for example? Somebody loves us. How do we say that this person loves us? We can express it. We can express love through our feelings. How do we say in words? Same thing goes for bhakti. For doing anything in our life, we have to have a love for that thing. Be it our work, be it our hobby, be it our sadhana. If we don't have love for our sadhana, it doesn't work. It doesn't click. So bhakti, we can, in limited the terms or words, we can describe it as absolute faith, bringing our mind, identifying and totally with our object steadfastly for a long time, is called bhakti. And we talk about upasana, like what is upasana? We know up, coming near, sitting, and asana is sitting down, upasana. But then let's break upasana also. To have upasana, we have to have an object upasana. That's a very essential criteria of having upasana. Then we are supposed to be able to bring that object in our thoughts. That's the second criteria of upasana. Then having a continuous, unbroken identification with it. In the green book, if you look it up, just before the third verse at the bottom page, Swami Gurudev has described as continuous tal dharavat, like a container which we pour out a thin tiny stream, continuous unbroken stream of oil, continuous tal dharavat, unbroken attention, like in the temple we have a shivaling, on top of that we have a container, and then it has a small rope and water continuously drips down on the shivaling. That continuous tal dharavat, that's the third essential criteria. And then, for a long time. So we have to have these criteria for the upasana. In Narad Bhakti Sutra, we have that book, I think, in the office, very wonderfully described and commented upon by Gurudev. They also have described bhakti. In our Hindu Purana, we have some famous sages. Sage Parashar has described bhakti as puja, worshipping. Purnam jayate is puja. Like, if a devotee has this thought as his bhakti, that I am doing puja, worshipping, and without this, if he doesn't do it for one day, he feels incomplete. Like, for example, we take up an activity like going to the gym. And one day, two day, we don't go to the gym, you know, we are irritable. We see there's something incomplete. After eating food, we don't get a dessert. You know, food maja nahi aaya. Where is the dessert, right? That thing that makes it complete is the puja, the worship. So that's described by Rishi Parashar. Then Garg Rishi, he describes puja, or rather bhakti, as listening to the Lord's glory, story, bhajan, kirtan, and continuously engrossed in that. That is described by Rishi Garga as bhakti. Then we have Rishi Shandalya. he describes that as continuously dwelling on the thought of the self is bhakti. And all of this has been very aptly summed up by Rishi Narada, who says, dedicating all the activities and the karmas and performing all the activities and karmas to the Lord. And whenever his thought is not there in your mind, you are as anguished like gopis when they are missing the Lord. They are disturbed. They are anguished. That is bhakti. So not having in his thought in the mind, that disturbing us, is bhakti, according to sage Narada. So when Arjuna has asked this question to Lord Krishna, Bhagwan, who is your greatest bhakta or devotee, saguna form or the nirguna form? And Bhagwan starts explaining in the terms of like who is the greatest devotee, one who has absolute faith, does it steadfastly, unbrokenly, for a long time. That is the devotee I love. And then he starts with the nirguna form, the akshara form, the description. And the devotee here who is able to identify himself with these 7-8 qualities, that is the devotee who has pretty much zero vasanas. He can identify himself with the aksharam, avyaktam, anirdesham, kutastham, achalam, dhruvam, sarvatragamam. That devotee who is able to identify himself as this, and he is able to control his indriyas, senses, and he is equanimous in all the situations of life, he is the one who comes to me, continuously engaged in the welfare of all the beings in this world. And then the next one, he says, it is difficult. How do we identify ourselves with something which is unmanifest? It is a difficult task. Not easy. Because we are continuously identified with our body, our relations, the objects in this world. So it's difficult for us. Unless we let go of that, it's very hard. And the devotee who's able to do that, that's the devotee who reaches me. And then the sixth one, he says, again, give up all of your activities, not give up, perform all the activities to me, just continuously do upasana on me, have faith in me. And in the seventh verse, he talks about mrityu samsara sagarat. Anilji explained that last time. I'll just give one more addition to that. What is mrityu samsara sagar? See, mrityu is like change, the biggest change. We have 6 changes in life. You know, we are born, then we grow up, then we have diseases, we have decay, then death. Death is the biggest change. And sansar, this is the sansar. The body, mass, intellect, identifying ourselves with this. We go towards the object, emotions and the thought. And then we become the perceiver, feeler and the thinker. That is our ego. With the vichip, as Swami Ishwarananda says. So this is sansar. So as long as we think that we are the body, we will always go through this sansar. And then we go through the biggest change, the death. Only to be reborn again. And going through the sansar sagrat again. There was a question raised last time. Do we get liberation after death? When do we get the liberation? We will get the liberation if we consider ourselves as a body. Then for us, mrityu or the death is the biggest change, but then only to come back. So in Vedantic terms, there is no liberation. There is no true liberation here. We will only come back as long as we are continuously identifying ourselves with the body. Only go through this journey of a jiva again, having this body, mind and intellect, going after the sensual objects of the world. So unless we give up this identification with the body, we will not be able to get out of this cycle. This is what he is talking about, the biggest change. And then, if you have, in the 8th verse, he is talking about if you are able to bring your mind and intellect. We had a question last time also about this, the mind and the intellect. If you are able to do that, if you are able to bring those two into me, now these mind and intellect, as Anilji said last time, these are the same aspects of the inner instrument, along with buddhi and chitta and ahankar. So we understand mind as that faculty that has likes and dislikes. We like certain thing, we don't like certain thing. Our mind tells us to do something because we like it. Our mind doesn't like something. Sorrows, happiness, joys. That is the mind aspect. And then the intellect aspect is the aspect that tells us what is right and what is wrong. The vivek that tells us you should do this or should not do this. The shreyas or the prayas. We always are running after things which we like, but our mind is pulling us back. That is the intellect aspect. Here in this context, we can understand that as mind being the emotional player and intellect being the rational player. So, as a devotee, we could probably just say, okay, the scriptures say that you should do the puja, do all the activities, do your worships, do your upasana, and then whatever happens, I'm going to continuously keep on doing my puja. Things are good, things are going on well, our job is well, there's no problem with the relationships, we are getting our promotions in life, the money is coming, we are doing our worship, perfect world, everything is going on well. Stock market crashes, something happens, we get sick. Why did this happen to me? I'm doing my puja. I'm doing my worship. Why did this happen to me? It shouldn't. I'm a very big devotee. I go to the temple every Sunday. I go to the temple every Tuesday. I take a coconut. I do my prasadam. I do puja every 4th Tuesday. I do Navgrah puja at my house. The priest comes and does it. I'm doing everything. But why did this have to happen with me? What wrong did I do? This is when our faith wavers. I'm doing everything right. I'm having a constant faith in God. Why did God have to do this to me? Why did I get cancer? Why did I get diabetes? Why did I have this accident? This is where we have not used our intellect or the logic. Bhagwan uses this word multiple times, yukta, or the yukti, or the logic. See, in scriptures, we have shruti, which is saying things, we are listening to the scriptures, we are hearing to the scripture, that is one aspect. But then we also use our yukti, or the logic aspect. So if we don't use this intellect or the yukti part or the logic part, we will fail to understand why is this happening to me. And then we'll blame God for this. Okay, well, I've been doing all my puja and this is happening to me. So I'm not going to go to the temple anymore. I'm not going to do the puja. I'm not going to do my services anymore. What is the point? I do this every day and God is doing this to me. So I think I'm going to stop doing this. And we blame God or challenge God or try to figure out some justification. But we forget that fortunately or unfortunately, or rather fortunately, God is also the karma faladata. So whatever we have done, not only recently, but in the distant past, in our past lives, thousands or millions of the lives that we have had, He is the one who's keeping everything in account. And we have no idea when those past actions or sins that we have committed are going to get fructified. As long as things are going on well, we are doing our stuff, God is great. Things go wrong, we get sick, we have an accident, something goes on wrong with the relationship. Why did this happen to me? I'm not going to go to the temple anymore. I'm going to stop doing this. But whatever we have done is going to come and face us. So our yukti, our intellect, should be to accept it. That yes, this is just a result of my past karmas that I have done. It's a very foolproof system. There is no bug in it. There is no virus in it. Like Apple, but Apple has bugs, I guess, these days. So this is foolproof system. There is no chance of any malfunction of this software. It is going to come and we are going to have to face it, no matter what happens. And as long as we are in this journey together, you know, I've used this example before. We are taking a plane ride. We're all co-passengers. Some of us get the business class ticket seat. Some of us get the first class. Some get the economy class ticket. Then we are stuck in the middle seat with a couple of heavy passengers on the side. Because this is what our karma was. This is what our upasana was. This is what vasanas we have had. Based on that, we got the seat. We may be sitting next to the toilet. The seat may be broken. This is what we deserve. So, instead of complaining, just going on with it. And having a constant faith in God with the logic that yes, whatever I do now, I will be facing or I will be getting the results later. But offering everything to God. So this is the Vishwarupa part. He started with the Nirguna part, the Avyaktam Aksharam that we have hard time understanding, the unmanifested form. Then he's stepping down to the form that is described in the 11th chapter, the Vishwarupa form, where God is beginningless, endless, middleless, from the Patal to the heaven, sun and moon as his eyes, where Arjuna could see the things that have happened in the past, things that are happening now, things that are going to happen in the future. So this is that aspect. And when we have a hard time understanding this, this is where the devotee has about, in Gurudev's explanation, about 20% vasana or so. So 0% vasana, he can totally identify himself, the Lord, just contemplates and merges with the God, no problem. Up here, the Vishwarupa Darshan person, devotee, has about 20% vasanas. He just has to work a little bit hard, brings his intellect and mind, surrenders it to the Lord. As Guruji says, surrender to the Lord and then merge with him. And now if we still have a problem that God, I cannot see you in this form, Vishwarupa, you are everywhere. Those five people I still have a problem with. That's still creating problem for me. I cannot identify them as part of you. So for that devotee, one notch down. Very, very, God is giving explanation, He's giving ways for every level, whatever level we have, which you have brought from the past. Nobody did it, we brought it with us. So for every notch, He's coming down and giving the explanation.